Pam from the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, and you can find it directly attached to my blog, Make Room for the Stuttering, at www.stutterrockstar.wordpress.com, or it's freely downloadable on iTunes as well. I'm really excited today to have yet another amazing woman engage in a conversation about stuttering. And this is somebody that I met at the NSA conference a couple of years ago, and she was at this year's NSA conference as well. So please join me in welcoming Lizette. Hey, Lizette.
Hi, Pam.
Can you introduce yourself to us and tell us where you're from?
Okay, my name is Lizette Wesseling, and I'm from New Zealand, though I was born in Holland, and I did spend about 7 years in England and a couple in Australia as well, so I've been around the world a bit.
Ah, so do you speak a couple of different languages then?
Yeah, I speak Dutch, and I did learn a bit of German, and I was pretty good at that for a while. And I did French, but really probably Dutch and English would be my main languages right now.
Wow.
So that's enough, probably.
Yeah. Do you find that you stutter equally in all the different languages, or is it primarily one over the other?
I think I stutter more in Dutch now because I don't speak it as often. So I can't switch words as often, so that's probably my avoiding behaviours. My vocabulary in Dutch is not as good, so I can't substitute words to hide stuttering, which is probably a good thing, but I definitely stutter more in Dutch also because, I think when I don't know the language as well, I get more anxious and that makes my stuttering worse and it goes round and round. Yeah, definitely Dutch, I would say. I stutter more. And I was in France last year for a conference, and I had to try and, dredge up my French from the years at school. And I stuttered a lot more in French, too, because I was trying to think of what I wanted to say. So my mental resources seemed to be focused a lot on that. And so it seemed to add to my stuttering, too. I'm not sure why.
Now, you went ahead and used a couple of words, so you actually set the stage for the question that I was going to ask to kind of get us started. But you've mostly been a covert stutterer, right?
Yeah, that's right. I didn't know what that was until 5-6 years ago when I was living in the UK. And I think the internet's been great because I went online and looked up stuttering and found the British Stammering Association and found their leaflet on, they call it interiorized stammering. And I read this and I thought, that is just me. And I just thought, finally, I know that there's something that I have. I mean, because I'd always known I stuttered, but then people had said to me, well, you don't really stutter. You just talk a bit fast or you just hesitate or that's not stuttering. And I was very confused for a long time about what it was that I had, and I've heard the story from other people. And so to give a name to something covert or interiorized or whatever you want to call it, basically the hiding part and the fairly high levels of fluency that you can experience. Mm. And it was just like, finally, I knew what it was called and that I wasn't the only person. Because I've had people flatly refuse to believe that I stutter. I remember I did a fluency shaping course in New Zealand 15, 16, whatever years ago, which is all that's really available here. And I remember being on the course and people said, why are you here? You don't stutter. And then afterwards I came off the course and I was talking to somebody and she said, but you don't stutter. And I said, well, I do. And she actually wouldn't. She just, no, you don't stutter. And well, I do. So it's so nice to have a name and to realize that it really exists, you know?
Yeah. As you know, I kind of had that same epiphany myself 4 years ago. I also, my first stuttering self-help experience was the NSA conference back in 2006. And I had gone to a workshop there called Covert Stuttering. And like you, it was the first time that I had heard my story coming out of somebody else's mouth.
And absolutely.
I was the same as you, like, oh my gosh, like there's a name for this, you know, that I've done for so long. And quite frankly, I thought I had done it pretty well. And come to find out that I hadn't.
Yeah.
You know? So
I know. I thought that too. I thought I'd hidden it pretty well. And as you say, I hadn't really. Anyway, go on.
No. Go ahead.
I think for me the covert part has gone very deep, and even to the point that I denied that I stuttered. You know, it's sort of I know that even I denied that I was stuttering more than I thought I was. I thought I was more fluent and I was more successful. I thought I was more successful than I probably actually was. And there was almost a pride in thinking, well, I can pull it off pretty well. And I realized over the last few years that actually when I think I'm fluent, I'm still sometimes, you know, the hiding stuff that I do makes my speech sort of still sound like it's not normal. It still sounds stuttery, even if it's not exactly that you don't hear the stutters. There's still a lot of hiding and, you know, lots of you knows and ums and very fast talking and ducking and diving around stuff. And I don't think I ever acknowledged that. So the covert thing goes very deep, you know.
How has it affected your life?
Wow. I was thinking about that before. I think it's affected me more than I realized. I think I was thinking that I really sometimes still find times when I just don't want to speak up. And when I, to the point where I think, well, I've got nothing to say anyway, like what I have to say is not worth hearing. So I'll just not talk. And it's partly because the stuttering has sort of shaped my self-image almost, I think, in a way. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that I was actually also born blind, or went blind at the age of 3 months. And so as a child, the only thing that my parents really saw was the blindness. And I can understand that to a point, you know, well, I can understand that for sighted people, thinking about being blind or thinking about not seeing is pretty scary. You know, you have these images of being in the dark and groping around and suddenly having no more vision and feeling terrified. And then it goes even deeper into the sort of psychological thing of childhood and being left in the dark and monsters and nightmares and being abandoned. And it has quite deep psychic, echoes as well. And I think, so for me, for my parents, I think the blindness was the big issue, you know. And of course it is. It's, you growing up without sight, you have to learn skills and everything. But I think as a result of that, the blindness was all they saw, and the stuttering, which was equally a part of me but was never talked about. It was never acknowledged. It was never ever discussed. Well, it was discussed in a negative sense of like, just don't do it, and you can fix it, and just take a deep breath and think about it, and oh, you're just so intelligent, you just think too fast, you know, all your thoughts are getting mixed up, and all this sort of stuff. And I think the stuttering has affected my life in that it has made me, it's been buried, you know, and it's been kind of not integrated into me. And so I think there's a part of me that I'm really working hard to kind of collect back into myself and make part of me, you know.
Mm-hmm. When did you start stuttering?
Well, I have a recording of me at 3 years old, which my father made very, you know, in the early 70s with a new tape recorder. And I was stuttering on that just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I can hear myself stuttering, but it didn't seem to bother me. It was just a nice sort of gentle, relaxed sort of stutter. And I think it really started to bother me when I was seven. It was a period where I was, where a teacher actually spent some time mocking me and imitating my stuttering, in front of me, in front of other children. And I think that really made things a lot worse, because I realised it wasn't acceptable. Mm-hmm. I certainly think I was trying to hide it earlier, but probably seven is when I became aware of it and conscious. Mm-hmm. And then I started to speak faster and do a lot more hiding. to the point where when I was nine, and we'd already moved to New Zealand. We'd had actually come to New Zealand, and my parents then didn't realise I stuttered, and that because there'd been discussions of it by teachers, and I was to go and see a speech therapist to be assessed, you know, to see whether I stuttered and what they could do. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm just going to fool this person, and I'm actually going to, if she asks me something I can't answer because I know I'll stutter, I'm going to pretend I don't understand the English, because I was still learning English, and I thought I can probably actually make this, you know, I can just pretend I don't know the English word. So when it came to it, I actually did fool her, and the assessment came back, which said that I didn't stutter.
Oh.
And I was very proud of myself. I was so proud. I remember, and as a nine-year-old, being terribly proud that I'd managed to hide it to that extent and managed to make them think that I didn't stutter, that I could fix it, you know?
So because of that, you didn't have any further speech therapy in school?
Well, no, not until I was 17. And then I really got to the end of my hiding tricks, because by then I was studying French, and it was done by correspondence, and we had to do our French oral on cassette. And so I actually had to, you know, do oral presentations. And I was pausing in between every word. I was pressing the pause button, saying every word and then pausing, because I was stuttering so much.
Oh, wow.
And my French teacher told me I wasn't allowed to do that. She said, you have to speak, you know, just speak normally and don't pause so much. And, you know, don't press the pause button and just speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't, because I was just stuttering. And I didn't want them to know. And I told a teacher, and she got me I think 6 weeks of speech therapy at that point, and it was a very nice speech therapist, I must say, but she was very kind, and it was the first time I'd ever talked about it with anybody in any kind of neutral kind of way, you know, not loaded with parental angst and things. But and she taught me this fluency technique called smooth speech, which is what's really used here. But I'm afraid as soon as I left the clinic, it didn't really work,
right.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people have had those experiences with fluency shaping therapy, that it's tough to transfer it over into the quote unquote real world, and that's why so many people have struggled with using the techniques and the strategies or the targets, as some of them call it. I did it briefly myself and found that it wasn't useful for me.
Well, I think for me, for a covert, sorry, I interrupted you there.
That's
sorry.
Okay.
It's very, I know you've said that yourself, that it's hard not to do that.
It's hard to tell when we're finished.
It is. I think for a covert stutterer like me, for me anyway, the smooth speech, because the smooth speech just becomes another way to hide stuttering. And it was another trick that I wanted to use. And because I actually did then do a 2-week intensive program a couple of years later when I was 21 or 20 or something. And so I got quite good at it for a while, and I was practicing, you know, and used the technique. But it became another way to hide stuttering, which is my whole aim was not to be allowed to stutter. I didn't think stuttering was okay. I thought it was terrible, and I wanted to hide it, and I wanted to fix it and not have this, you know. And I thought I could fix it by working really hard. And I know we had a keynote speech last week at the conference, which essentially said, if you work hard enough, you'll be fluent. And I just violently disagree with that, because I worked extremely hard. But for me, it was the wrong treatment, totally.
Yeah. What do you think would be the right approach to take with a covert stutterer?
Well, when I finally revisited my stuttering in 2003 in the UK, I found that the right kind of approach, which is really, first of all, learning to stutter more openly and actually acknowledging that you'd stutter and talking about it and stuttering and taking that stuttering moment and looking at it. And I'm having some more speech therapy at the moment.
Really?
Again, yeah. I'm having to do that over the internet with somebody from the US, because I don't really know whether there's anybody here that would favor that treatment approach. Because so it's really stuttering more openly, and And of course, you know, you can, I mean, you can use techniques if you want to, and I sometimes still do, but I very much choose to use those. And the main work for me is stuttering more openly and kind of experiencing that moment and not panicking, and just actually maybe even stuttering a bit longer to sort of play with it, you know?
So you're doing a lot of voluntary stuttering then?
Yes, well, not as much as I should, because I still find it pretty scary to do that, especially in my work environment. Mm-hmm. I'm a lot better with my friends. My friends all know I stutter. I talk about it. I can talk to my mother about it now, which I never really could before. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I've come a long way. And yes, I do voluntary stuttering, sometimes more than others. Thank you. that was a fake question.
Was that just a voluntary stutter?
Yeah. Yeah, that was.
Very good. Bravo.
Thank you. It still feels like a big deal, but I still really struggle in my workplace, and that's where I still go back to my hiding persona, which is I mustn't tell them and they mustn't know. And sometimes I do tell people. And I find that really hard, because I don't know what it is about my work being professional. I think I'm not allowed to stutter, and I don't know why.
Well, two questions just popped into my head, and I'm gonna write one of them down so that I don't forget it. But I don't think you mentioned what type of work do you do.
Okay, I have two jobs, really. I work as a Braille awareness consultant, so I try to promote Braille and the use of Braille in New Zealand. I work for the Foundation of the Blind here in Wellington, I should say. And then the other half of my week, I'm a music teacher. I'm a professional soprano, and I teach music and singing in my home, in my private studio. So I have sort of two jobs.
Wow. So which one is it more difficult for you to disclose your stuttering?
In my Braille work, where it's more of a corporate environment, where I'm representing the foundation and I'm representing Braille and I'm kind of spokesperson for Braille, and I think that that it would be unacceptable for people to hear me stutter. When I'm being me as a singing teacher, and because music's a little bit more touchy-feely or a little bit more, do you know what I mean? It's more creative. It's a bit softer. It's sort of softer, isn't it? There's something about the arts where you're kind of allowed to be yourself, and it's a bit softer. But when the sort of other world, it's quite a... I mean, it certainly isn't cutting edge like the Wall Street would be, or sort of the financial market, but it has that component of... being, you know, sometimes I work with companies who deal with signage and design, and you know, and engineers who want to make signage equipment for Braille, and these people talk fast and just want the quick answers, that, you know, they just want the measurements and things, and you know, they don't really want to hear me stuttering, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I really admire those people that I hear and I've seen at the NSA who are lawyers and doctors and physicians and whatever, and they stutter, and I think, God, how do you do that in your workplace, you know? And you, for goodness sake, you work with kids, and I mean, one of my big themes at the moment is listener reactions and having kids, people laugh at you or having people comment or make funny faces, which fortunately I can't see. But even so, you still get the laughs and the look. I'm sure you get the looks and you get the comments. And someone like you, who's in the school environment where you're stuttering so openly, and I think, how does she do it?
Well, it took a while, and it also has taken me a while to realize that sometimes they are giving me the look, or they're giggling, or they're, you know, they're rolling their eyes because they're not used to hearing stuttering and they find it funny. But sometimes it's just because they're 16-year-olds. And, you know, 16-year-olds can be goofy and you know, not politically correct about all adults. You know, so it took me a while to kind of separate me from that and realize that I'm not necessarily the center of teen worlds, like, you know, like I thought for a long time. But it's taken me the better part of the four years of my own particular journey with being open or more open anyway. You know, you just, I mean, I think you're probably in the middle of this process.
I am.
I think the more that you become uncovert, the harder it is to go back. So because I've been so much more open and overt with my stuttering, it's sometimes almost impossible to hide it anymore. So it's not even like a choice sometimes. It's just out there. And then once it's out there and, you know, the kids or somebody else does make a comment, then I have to deal with it in that moment.
Yeah, and I think what I admire about people like you and other people that I hear on the internet or that I've met, you know, they don't emotionally crumble when someone makes a comment. And at this moment, I still would. I think I'm working on that. I'm getting there, and I've got lots of really good support now, which is really helping me. But maybe that's part of being a woman, that we probably emotionally are, well, I am anyway, less resilient maybe, or I don't know what it is, you know, than men.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because I jotted down two things that I wanted to go back to. You were saying that you find it easier to deal with the stuttering in the softer, more creative, more expressive music world as opposed to the more corporate culture of your Braille job. Are there more men in that environment?
Well, and the foundation is a rehabilitation service industry organization, so probably not.
Okay.
There are men, but no, I wouldn't. It's a fairly female-dominated kind of environment because it's rehab and, you know, it's not as well paid and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more to do with what I think people want from me, you know. When I'm, because equally when I'm being the Lizette, the soprano, when I'm singing somewhere, I find it really hard then to disclose that I stutter as well and to stutter.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when I'm being a teacher, I'm being more of a receptor. I'm a listener. And I'm kind of softer because I'm trying to help other people express themselves.
Right.
So it's something to do with that. And that's, you've made me think about this. And it's interesting to, I'm going to keep thinking about that because I don't really think it's about the men thing. Mm-hmm. It's more about the role that I think I have or something like that.
Yeah. Because the first thing that I thought of when you mentioned that one of the difference was the corporate culture, I didn't necessarily think of the men versus women thing, but I thought more of, maybe she's more afraid of the judgment that is involved in the corporate culture.
Yes, and I think the judgment comes back to what happened to me as a child, which was a male teacher, you know, so I guess the judgment is, yeah, that is definitely, I fear I'm going to be judged, and I probably fear I'm going to be judged when I'm a singer as well, in terms of, because I'm, you know, I fear that they're going to think, well, how can she, if her voice sounds when she sings, if her voice sounds like that, how can it sound so terrible when she's speaking, you know, like, how can you have the same voice doing two things, singing, hopefully, you know, hopefully well and whatever, but also speaking in such a kind of disjointed and kind of, I was going to say broken. I guess I still see stuttering as a little bit broken, but I'm working on it.
Mm-hmm. Now, since you just segued into the other question that I had, going back to where you were talking about what you're doing right now presently in your therapy, you said that you've been experimenting more with voluntary stuttering, and that one of the things that you've been trying to work on is to hold on to the stutter more. I found myself kind of fascinated with that phrase, hold on to the stutter more. Can you talk about that a little bit and, like, what do you do and what that's like?
Well, I think habitually when I hit a stutter, I want to run away from it. I want to turn around and run away, or, you know, push it down and get beyond the stutter as quickly as possible, because it makes me panic, you know, and I feel like I'm trapped. And I think what I'm working on right now is the idea of just maybe stuttering longer. So if I'm in a stutter, like I was then, rather than just going in a stutter and just rushing on, mm-hmm. trying to just hold on to that sound, and then when the panic goes, then just melting into the next word, or doing what I did then, with which was a pause. But either way, actually not rushing away from it, not running away. And I do find the panic, the panic does go if you just kind of almost lean into it a bit. That's what a phrase somebody's used with me in the past, you know, lean into the panic, then it will sort of go. And there is a sort of spiritual maxim, which I don't really know where it came from, but it is that if you actually embrace what you don't want, it will kind of, it's better than if you don't. I don't know, that's not a good way of expressing it. But it's like if you actually run towards the thing that you fear, it will get smaller and go eventually.
I think that's a wonderful way of expressing it.
Not that I'm trying to get rid of the stuttering, but I'm trying to get rid of the fear, you know, about stuttering. I'm not, fluency is no longer my goal, I have to say, and you know.
Yeah. So, okay. I guess I'm gonna harp on this concept just a little bit more. When you say that you panic, is it physically? Do you feel physical symptoms of panic, or is it more emotionally that you get panicked?
I think it's emotionally. I don't have panic attacks or hyperventilate, or it's more of an emotional panic.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like you want to sort of, at its worst, you feel like you want to start crying, at its very worst. I haven't had that for a while, but it's that sort of thing, and you just feel like this, I don't know, I can't, it's an emotional feeling, not a physical one.
Mm.
And part of it, I think, is that I don't think people want to take the time to listen to me stuttering. Like, I feel that people don't want to take that time to listen to me do that, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I admire people like you. You can just stutter and just, you just make people wait. And I've heard some of your radio interviews where you do that. There was one, it was a couple of years ago, and there was one last year, I think, or this year, I think, I forget. But I've done media interviews myself because of part of my job, and as a blind person, you end up becoming a bit of a poster girl sometimes for things, even if you don't want to be, you know. And I think when I do media interviews, I tend to do a lot of my hiding and talk fast and switch words and, you know, restart sentences and not necessarily say exactly what I want to say, but also never stuttering then, never just plain old stuttering, you know. And so I really admire you for the way you can do those media interviews and just stutter.
thank you. I appreciate it. I think I'm at a stage in my life right now where I feel, as corny as it might sound, or it still sounds to me, I feel like because I can do this and can talk about stuttering like I've never been able to before, that I should. And you know, because I feel like it's probably helping somebody, or it's impacting somebody out there, and I don't even know it probably. So we should.
That's right. I know, and I hope that, you know, there will be other people in New Zealand too who are like me, you know, that the teenager who thought there was no one else ever out there who stuttered and who were hiding it, and who, and all the other women in New Zealand, or anyone really, anywhere, you know, that I mean, I want to, if I've got time, I want to just share a brief story about the extent to which I used to do my hiding. I mean, when I had those 6 weeks of speech therapy, when I was 17, I remember that it was at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday, and I had to be dropped off by my mother an hour earlier at the school, so that because she had to go to work or something. So, but rather than waiting in the lobby, where everybody could see me and where they'd say, "Oh, what are you doing here and why are you here?" and you know, can I help you? Because they'd think I'd be lost or something, and I wasn't. Mm-hmm. Rather than doing that, I went into the bathrooms and hid myself away for an hour in the cold bathroom cubicle, shut the door, because I didn't want anyone to ask me why I was there and ask me, because I didn't want to tell them I was going to speech therapy. And, you know, there must be people out there doing something similar, that wanting to hide that much from a part of themselves, you know?
Yeah. Now, is there self-help or support in New Zealand for people that stutter?
Yes, there is. It's a fairly small movement, but it's essentially focused on fluency maintenance using smooth speech or Maguire. The Maguire program is fairly popular here. And so the self-help movement, which exists, which I'm not really a part of, is very much based on fluency shaping and on helping you to maintain the skills that you've learned, so that you practice with each other and you rate each other's syllables per minute. Right. And there may be a little bit of emotional support, but the aim of the group is that, in the mission statement of the Speakeasy Association, is achieving fluency with confidence and support.
I
see. That's the mission statement of the group, which, you know, I absolutely respect. People want to do that, but it wasn't a healthy road for me, and I didn't find any joy in it and any help and health in it, really.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, you also mentioned that right now you're participating in therapy online with somebody here in the U.S.
That's right.
What type of therapy is that?
I don't know if it has a name. It's just.
But it's different from fluency shaping, though, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's working with the stuttering, being more open. There is certainly some work on regulating the speech so that you can minimize some of the stuttering when you want to.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I find that helpful. But the majority of the work is really on fake stuttering. And just stuttering more and changing attitudes and beliefs and thoughts and stuff, you know. So it's much more on the Van Riperian, well, I don't know if that's exactly the word, but, you know, it's much more on that Van Riper sort of stuttering modification way, but it's very much tailored to me. It isn't a set program, you know,
right,
that you run through.
How did you find out about this option?
Well, I just asked around, and I asked for some names of people who understand covert stuttering, and I contacted this person, and we agreed, and we do it via Skype, actually, and it works very well, I must say. So it can be done. It really can.
Yeah, that's great, because I was just going to ask, how do you find doing therapy, you know, over the internet, but it would be essentially the same as we're doing. We're just talking with each other, and I imagine that the person just provides you the needed feedback, right?
Yeah, and we have video, because the person wants to see, he wants to see me.
Okay.
So that you can watch what I'm doing, and that works well. I mean, sometimes the connection's not good, but it's very rare, you know, as you know, with Skype, it comes and goes.
Right.
But generally, it works extremely well. We started out on the phone,
mm-hmm.
and that was okay, but then I started getting more into the mechanics, and I started to lock up sometimes, and I think it was helpful that you could see me.
Ah.
And so we went to the Skype, and, mm-hmm. You know, you have to deal with time differences and transferring money and, you know, over exchange rates and everything, but it's been so worth it. 2 years ago, when I went to the NSA conference, a lot of people thought I was going to a work conference. I didn't tell them. I couldn't tell them where I was going. I'd slipped back quite a lot from my time in the UK to being back in New Zealand. I'd slipped back into my denial, my covert thinking and lying and stuff, and it was terrible, really. And I thought, this is no way to live. I can't do this. You know, this is. And I'm working with this person for just under 2 years now. Since then, I've you know, I can talk to my family and friends a lot more easily now, and I'm working on the professional part now. I think I'm stepping up the pace a bit, you know, advertising and all that.
Well, this is certainly part of it for you.
That's a bit scary. People are gonna hear me stuttering.
but it's good for you. It's good for others that are gonna hear this, and it certainly is. I mean, I just think it's so valuable for other people to hear so many different women stutter so differently.
Well, thank you for creating the opportunity, because it's not easy to host a podcast if you stutter. Well, it's not easy to host a podcast full stop, I don't think. And then if you stutter and if you're covert and if you want to hide it as you used to do, you know, it's a great forum that you've created. And I really hope it helps somebody too. I hope that someone listening out there, you know, realizes that there are other people like them, and especially if they're covert. Yeah. That, you know, if they habitually hide it, and some of those deeper psychological aspects of it, that they realize that there is help available, and you just need to ask around and reach out to the right people.
Well, you're certainly, you know, proof of what can happen when you really just make that decision to move forward and make some changes. Gosh, it's got to feel really good, huh?
It does. I feel like a different person than I did 2 years ago, and it is hard work, but it's hard work that pays off. And it certainly doesn't. It hasn't come easily to me. It hasn't sort of been a free ride in any way. I've had a lot of angst, and it's been fairly painful over the sometimes, you know. And I couldn't have done this without an individual supporting me, and my husband, who's been great, and all that as well. You know, my other friends. Yeah. But I certainly, having support is vital, whether be it professional, if you can afford it, and or self-help, and via the internet. You know, I'm amazed at how the internet can be used in such a supportive way as well.
Well, it certainly does make the world smaller for
people,
because, I mean, we're having this chat and we're 16 hours away from each other, and it's just amazing that we can do this, and you know, I don't think people are truly aware of the value that the internet has to really, you know, bring us together.
Well, I think it's bringing stutterers closer together. You know, 16 years ago when I was doing my smooth speech, the internet wasn't really around, you know, and I didn't know anybody else who stuttered apart from those people in my course and here in New Zealand. And suddenly now there's all this information online. You can Google anything, you can YouTube anything, and there's also probably a lot of rubbish out there that people might not, well, there probably is, but if you find the right people, you can use social media and Skype and things to get connected. And I think there's a lot of people traveling on this journey together, and I've certainly found it helpful to realize that other people are going through the same hard times that I am sometimes, and the good times, you know, and that we're all traveling, and I think together, you know, you can do a lot.
Yeah, I see that you write that often on some of your posts.
Oh, do I? Yeah. Oh dear, do I?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. You encourage people and you remind people on the covert list that it's a journey, and that we're on a journey. And I find myself being struck by that. Like, that's almost kind of like becoming one of your signatures, you know. you remind people it's a journey, isn't it?
I think for so many years I've felt stuck, I mean, in my speech, but also in my progress and my growth. That's I never thought of it like that. But you know, you can stuttering is all about getting stuck and not working on it and not doing anything about it in a healthy way makes you feel stuck. And I think what I've realized over the last 2 years is that working on stuttering is really about working on yourself as a personal growth. You know, I see it much more in a holistic way as well as the speech. It's the whole person, you know, growing and I think as long as you're growing and moving, you won't feel stuck. And you, while you might still get stuck in your speech sometimes, it's not, it doesn't feel as bad because you're traveling, you know?
Right. You know, that's what I talked about in the workshop that I did this year at the NSA conference. I talked about change and personal change and stuckness, you know, and what happens when we don't deal with certain things, and then what happens when we do, because just like you said a moment ago, I'm a completely different person than I was several years ago. And so are you. And it's because of the journey that we've been on. And had it not been for stuttering, we would not have experienced this self-actualization, I don't believe.
I would agree with that. I have never thought of stuttering as a gift, and I guess I'm beginning to see that it can be, you know, and it is, as you say, it's the stuttering that's made me A, come to the States twice to meet, and B, met all these amazing people. You know, I've got a lot more friends now because I stutter, so it's a direct correlation. Now, and C, this whole growth thing, you know, realizing, working on stuff from the past and moving through it and coming out the other side and feeling like a new person, you know.
Yeah. Now, what did you tell people this time, this year, about
the conference? I told them the truth. I told them that I was going to a conference. It's funny. When I was coming home on the plane, I had two incidents where I told somebody I'd been to a conference about stuttering, and one of them said, "Well, whatever you did, it worked because you aren't stuttering anymore." So I said, "Well, it's not about a cure." And I said, "I do still stutter. In fact, I had stuttered with them in the conversation, but they hadn't heard it." But they said, "Oh, great! Whatever you did, it worked." And then the second person, when you come into New Zealand, you have to fill out one of those arrival cards, and one of the questions is, "What's your occupation?" And I had the guy who was helping me, I had already told him I'd been to a stuttering conference, and he was about to write down that I was a speech therapist, because he thought, because I'm not stuttering, that must mean I'm a speech therapist. And I said, "No, I'm not a speech therapist. I stutter. I went because I stutter." He says, "Oh." I just thought it was quite funny that, you know, so yes, I've definitely told everybody that where I went.
Yeah.
So that's.
How did that feel?
It felt good. It's with certain people, it's not as easy as with others. I told my boss, and that was really hard. I still felt quite ashamed to tell her, but I know it's the right thing to do. But there are still times when I don't tell people, I have to say. And there might still be times, even now, when someone asks me where I've been, and I won't tell them. But that would be people I'm really sort of scared of and I don't know that well. But it's definitely much less than it was. I'd say 90% of the people I will tell or I would tell, and rather than only 10% last time or 20% last two years ago.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. So one last question. Would you consider yourself still to be covert at this point in your life?
Yes, but I'm definitely becoming more overt. I mean, I think the covert part is part of my psyche in one sense, and I think I'll always be to some extent covert, but I'm definitely a lot less covert than I was, and I'm definitely trying to be more open with my stuttering and stuttering more. And so yes, I think I'm coming out of it, but I still probably am a bit. You know?
Well, yeah, definitely. I remember last year at the NSA conference in Arizona, I was I had met up with Bob Wellington, who is also on the covert list. Do you know Bob?
I don't know him. I've read some of his emails.
Yeah,
I don't know him though.
He came up with the word that we're actually biverts.
Because I personally, I don't like the word recover. I find that recovering stutterer not a word I would use. So I don't want to say I'm a recovering covert stutterer, but bivert, yeah, I could do that.
I kind of like that too. I quite like that. Yeah. Listen, Lizette, this has been a great conversation. I'm so glad we had this opportunity. Thank you for sharing.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for, you know, putting it together, and it's been a good connection too on the Skype.
Yeah, it has. It's been a great connection. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.